Hi, everyone. Thanks so much for joining us on this episode of the CASA Connection. I'm Jeff Warren from CASA Shaw.
And I'm Tracy Heisler, also from CASA Shaw.
It is great to be in your ears as this week we are talking about poverty in foster care. It is an issue, Tracy, that we see constantly on a day-to-day basis within the foster care world, within our CASA families, the CASA children that we serve. Poverty is a huge issue when it comes to the world of foster care.
It really is, Jeff. And while we do get the occasional parent that, you know, has higher levels of education or has stable housing and employment, by far the vast majority of the families that we see are families that are struggling economically.
Yeah. And the pandemic did not help things out here, did it?
It did not, not in the least. And while there were certainly some supports in the beginning with the stimulus payments, those, as you know, stopped. And as inflation has creeped up and prices have shot out of control, there are a lot of families who are living on the edge.
It seems to me, and I think it seems to individuals in the outside world as well who may be listening to this particular podcast on poverty, that there is a vicious cycle that continues to perpetuate itself over and over and over again from a generational standpoint when we look at what poverty is and the effects of that on families in our communities. And I think one of the things we try to do here at CASA is we don't try to, quote, break the cycle. We try to be that foundation for children, inevitably at the end of the day, but that we are able to help provide resources for families, help them get back on their feet, to help give them the boots and the straps, hopefully, so that they can pull themselves up by the bootstraps. That's what I always like to say. It does bother me every now and then when people say, just pull yourself up by your bootstraps. Well, you need the boots and the straps in order to pull yourself up. So I like that that is something, of course, that we do here at CASA, but I think the greater population and community need to realize and understand that you just can't break the cycle just like that with the snap of a finger. It takes time.
Well, it's complex, and there are a lot of complexities of it that most people, unless you've lived it, you don't see, right? So we've talked before. I grew up in poverty. I know what this world looks like. Now I'm happily ensconced in the middle class.
Yeah.
But there were a lot of steps that had to be taken to reach that milestone. And there were privileges that I had as a intelligent, white person with good manners that people wanted to help.
Right.
I had a lot of mentors along the way who assisted. But there is definitely a bias that we as a culture have towards the poor.
I think that's interesting, yeah.
And there's definitely a sense of who's the deserving poor.
Ah.
Who are the people who merit the help?
Yes.
You can't have any drug issues. You can't have any mental health issues.
Right.
You can't have any illegitimate children.
Right.
You can't have too many children.
Mm-hmm.
And the list goes on and on of the things that qualify us as the deserving poor.
Absolutely.
So much of this world is interconnected with things like, we know that people with adverse childhood experiences, high ACEs, tend to have lower socioeconomic outcomes. They're poor as adults for a number of reasons.
Yeah, and real quick, we are going to be getting into ACEs at some point down the road in future podcasts. So folks out there, if you want to learn really quick what ACEs is all about, just A-C-E-S, Google it, and you're going to be able to learn about it in terms of what Tracy's talking
about
now. But we're going to have more podcasts in the future talking about ACEs.
Yeah.
So go ahead, Tracy.
But the acronym is Adverse Childhood Experiences,
yes,
of crap things that happen to you,
yes,
as a kid. So that's one aspect of it. Another one is intergenerational wealth. There are a whole lot of people, myself included, whose families never bought homes, whose families never bought stocks,
right,
whose families never had any kind of investment that they could gift to their children.
Right.
And that cycle continues, right?
Yeah.
So that's another aspect of poverty.
Well, I think that substance abuse as well needs to really be talked about in terms of poverty too, because you see certain families that come from, again, I go back to the generational cycle. When it comes to substance abuse, a lot of that is from a genetic standpoint that you just can't break being an addict necessarily. If you're an addict, regard to alcohol, with regard to drugs. You can't just necessarily break it one day.
But there is a huge correlation between high ACEs and substance abuse issue. There you go.
Yeah, absolutely.
So when you have a kid who's genetically wired for substance abuse issues, and then you pair that with trauma within childhood and parents who don't have good, strong parenting skills, who may themselves have mental health issues or substance abuse issues because of their own trauma, you've set up a cycle for this repeated generational impacts.
Right, exactly.
So one of the things that has historically been common, but fortunately there's greater awareness, is the conflation of poverty with neglect.
Mm-hmm.
Being poor in and of itself is not a crime.
Right.
Being poor in and of itself is not child abuse.
Mm-hmm.
It's being poor.
Yeah.
And so for those families where there's no abuse or neglect, how do we help them get to a place of, as you mentioned earlier, a foundation, a floor, so that they can be building?
Right.
So one of the more recent kind of practices over the last few years, there was legislation, I think it was in 2018, called Families First. It was federal legislation that mandated that child welfare agencies be putting more dollars and resources into family preservation, into these vulnerable homes that need help. And we're seeing that here in New Jersey. And one of the practices associated with Families First is that when kids are removed from the home, the division is making more diligent efforts to place with family.
Right.
So these are people who didn't plan to become foster parents. These are people who perhaps were not in a space where they were planning for
right.
this.
Nobody puts it on their monthly checklist of things that they're going to be needing to do. Oh, I'm going to become a resource home. I'm going to become a foster family this month.
For my grandchildren.
Exactly.
Or for my nieces or nephews. So those are families that may have economic vulnerabilities coming into this work. And so that's one of the spaces where we at Casa Shaw have tried to be mindful of providing supports. If you're from the middle class and your tire blows and it's going to be, you know, $150 for the tire and to have it taken off, and then you probably have to buy two to balance them, so that's closer to $300. If you don't have $300 in your checking account, you pull out your credit card and you take care of it.
Right.
If you are somebody in poverty, you have neither a credit card nor cash.
Right.
What are you going to do?
Exactly.
And if you can't fix those two tires, you can't go to work.
Right.
And if you can't go to work, the consequences of that are dire. You can't pay your rent. You can't buy food. You can't, you know, take care of your electric bill or utilities. And it becomes a cascading effect.
Exactly. It's a tremendous cycle with what you just described. But I really think it's important that we hone in on a phrase that you used, which was economic vulnerability. And I don't think a lot of people understand too much what economic vulnerability actually means. And I think it's important for us, not just here within our CASA programs or those who are listening to us, who are CASA volunteers, who are just listening to this podcast because they find the content interesting, that economic vulnerability can even happen to individuals in the middle class and affect their lives and take their lives down to an area that they may not have known and realized. It's important to understand economic vulnerability, like you said. And I think the more that we talk about that, the more that we educate people about economic vulnerability, perhaps more understanding there will be out there for folks who deal with the foster care system and the realities of it.
Well, and don't you think that with the inflation that we're seeing and a looming recession, that people in the middle class who take for granted that, hey, I'm a functional working adult and I pay my rent and I, you know, I've got food on the table. As those pinches start happening, you have to start making some choices that you may not have had to make before.
Exactly.
And it gives you a little bit of glimpse into the world of poverty.
Right.
Of where, you know, where what's the best of all my bad choices?
Exactly. Exactly. I wanted to shift our conversation, Tracy, to basically an article that I read, but we know that it's a reality here in New Jersey for, you know, for many states throughout the country, many counties throughout the country, where states that send kids to foster care, their parents, after it's all said and done, will get a huge bill from the county saying, you owe us this type of money. So really quick story from NPR. It was just before Christmas in 2017. A woman named Daisy, she was desperate for a place to live, moved into the trailer of a friend who had an extra room to rent. And after Daisy separated from her husband, she and her three kids had moved from place to place, staying with family and friends. Now, 2 weeks after living at this new address, police raided the trailer. They found drugs, drug paraphernalia, according to court reports. There were others that were being targeted within that home. Daisy was at work at the time. No drugs were found on her, and police did not charge her. However, Child Protective Services in Wright County, Minnesota, placed the kids into foster care. She had two daughters and a son at the time, a 15, 10-year-old, and 9-year-old. And the county had argued that she left the children in an unsafe place and an unsafe atmosphere. So fast forward 20 months later, after her children were in foster care, three children, they come back home, and she gets a bill from Wright County to reimburse the county for some of the cost of that foster care, which totaled over $19,500. And I wanted to bring this up because not only do individuals who are a part of the foster care system, they're there due in part, some individuals, because of poverty, getting a bill like this probably doesn't help get them back on their feet, I would think.
Well, and the circumstances that she was in to get her in that place, was homeless, yes. Right? Essentially, she was homeless.
Yes.
And she was depending on the goodwill of friends or family to put a roof over her head, yeah, and her kid's head. And,
yes,
and there's a consequence to that. And we see this with our own kids that are aging out of the system. There's a significant number of them that it's more than a third are homeless and they're couch surfing or sleeping in parks,
yeah,
because they don't have other options.
Right.
And that's an area that I think both our kids as they age out, our parents as their kids are being removed, we don't have a robust enough safety net,
right,
for those vulnerable families. And there has to be a more systemic, in my opinion, for whatever it's worth, that nobody asked,
right,
for, there have to be more systemic supports for those foundational issues of need,
right,
like housing and food and healthcare.
And I think that's why CASA is so important. That's why our CASA volunteers are so important, too. We aren't necessarily going to be able to provide them everything they need to get back on their feet, but just a little bit of support every now and then. So here at CASA, we have resources that we want to make sure that our CASA families and our children have as just a way to help them. And I think that's part of the good work we do here.
No, absolutely. And we have been really fortunate to have community partners that have donated things like diapers and wipes. That's,
yes,
$100 a month,
yeah,
right there.
Right.
That you can use for other things.
Mm-hmm.
We also have some community partners and friends who've given us gift cards for food.
Right.
Which can knock out another $200 a month that somebody might have to come up with to take care of their of other things for the two tires,
exactly,
that need to be taken care of. So,
exactly,
by providing these tangible resources, we can help reallocate the little that they have and make those choices a little easier.
It's why CASA and the work that we do is so very important. So I think this was a great discussion, Tracy. And if anybody has any other information or questions they want to pass along to us, they can reach out to us at info@casashaw.org. You can email us resources that you think might be beneficial or helpful to the children and families that we serve. Also, make sure to follow us on Twitter, Instagram, and Facebook. Search us out on Facebook, CASA Shaw, and on Twitter and Instagram, @CASA_Shaw, S-H-A-W. And I think that's going to do it for us this week, talking about child poverty and family poverty. It's such an important issue within the foster care world. Do you have anything else to close us out here, Tracy?
No, just that we'd be delighted to hear from you.
All right, folks, that is going to do it this week. Stay tuned for our next podcast, which is going to be focused on mental health. down the road. We will talk to you then.
Bye.